it is time for the food maven, Arthur Schwartz, our very own food maverick, food maven, food everything. Hi, Arthur.
It's interesting that you use the word maverick.
I use
because
the word
what Bob and I have been talking about lately is that, and this was actually started by his never giving up on turtlenecks since 1960. Fortunately, he has a long neck, so he can wear a turtleneck. But the thing is, if you keep to the same thing long enough, you become a maverick. And then you keep on even longer, and you get back in style.
Correct. And that was my mother taught me that about half a century, well, longer, actually. But that was always her policy. And also, if you have, or there is something that you like, and you have to understand that we once went across country stopping at all Rexall drugstores, crawling around the bottom shelf to get something that she wanted. So if you find something that you like, get it in, and it fits you and you love it, get it in as many colors, etc.
Oh, absolutely. That was my mother's, too. We had the same mother. My mother said, oh, if you like it, get in at least two colors.
At least, yeah.
And of course,
all of my, let's call them, Presbyterian friends, you know, I don't know whether to get the this or the this. Mama,
get
going on? But
anyway, so it was my birthday. Did we say this already?
Yesterday was my birthday. I never blab about your birthday except
okay.
you personally.
Because my whole food thing today is to talk about what did on my birthday. So I got to say
Arthur and my
brother
have the same birthday.
I guess I didn't have to say it was my birthday because what happened is I'm having some mobility issues and throw in there some laziness, and I didn't want to go out. So I made my own birthday dinner, which is what I would have gotten more or less if I went out, which was, in fact, I mean, I don't go out for too many things. I mean, speaking of mothers, my mother's thing was you only go out because they cook something you can't cook, one.
Right.
Or even if you go out for something you can cook, it's going to be better at home, but at least somebody carries it to the table and back to do the dishes. So, you know, being served has its charms. So I know that, but I didn't want to go out, and I prepared for the possibility that I would have a whim and not to go out, and I bought myself on Friday two really gorgeous rib steaks. They call these ribeyes these days. I'm going to get to all elements of this dinner in a second in detail. So I had these two steaks. I also prepared with two very large baked potatoes. I haven't had a big baked potato in a long time since I watch my carbs so well, but it's my birthday. And then nowadays, as I've said several times recently, I've been keeping frozen vegetables in the freezer in case I don't want to go out, even to buy some spinach. So I made cream spinach like I would at a steakhouse. Oh. So instead of going to a steakhouse, which, by the way, there are several in Brooklyn that I like very much, plus a couple that I haven't been to yet that I'm super curious about. However, I just didn't want to leave the house. And if I was in the steakhouse, I probably would have ordered the classic steakhouse meal, which is a steak, some kind of potato, not usually baked potato, but I do love a baked potato, and cream spinach, which, by the way, tastes very good on top of a baked potato.
Are you sour cream on your baked potato or not?
Good question, Jill. I only had a small amount of sour cream in the house.
Oh, cream spinach.
And I offered it to Bob because he loves sour cream on a baked potato. But we both opted to have just butter on the baked potato because we had this really, if I say so myself, sensational cream spinach.
And I just have to say that that used to be a dither of mine. Do I want it? Do I want it? And in the end, I land on butter, just butter.
Yeah, just butter.
Butter.
You know, my father used to make a ritual course out of a baked potato. He wanted to eat it for its own sake separately. So he would eat, I don't remember, truthfully, I think he ate it last. But he would dress it immediately as soon as it got to the table. Now, all right, so we're starting with potatoes.
Okay.
So those were the three elements of my birthday dinner. A great steak, got to say it was a great steak. A baked potato with just a lot of butter on it. And cream spinach. So let's start with the potato. I make my baked potatoes the way I was taught, literally, by James Beard, who used to say, you know, this was in the day when people started abusing the word gourmet, and he only liked to use it as a noun. A person was a gourmet, someone who was discerning about food, not a gourmand, somebody who eats a lot. You can be both, by the way. In fact, I said to somebody, I eat a very healthy food, except I eat too much of it. That's not actually true. I have a limited appetite lately. But anyway, here's how do you bake a potato. Forget foil. Forget greasing it. You just scrub it well. Put it in a scrub it well and poke it with a lot of holes to let steam out as it bakes. And then depending on the size of the potato, at 400 degrees, it's going to take, I would say, a minimum of 45 minutes, but more like if it's a gesunte, a big potato like I had, ours took a little over an hour each. And then, by the way, if they're done, the way to see if they're tender is to poke a knife in and see how soft they are. And you want them soft. And you want the skin to be a little crusty.
I'm a squeezer. I just have to say that.
I squeeze.
Okay.
Yeah, I'm a squeezer. But, you know, a lot of people are scared.
I know, plus it hurts. It could.
Well, not if you do it with a pot holder.
That's true.
Which I can do.
Exactly.
You know, in fact, so what I'm saying is if the potatoes are tender, turn off the oven and leave them in the oven until you're ready to eat them. But not too long, you know, 10, 15 minutes you can leave them in the oven. What will happen is nothing will happen to the wonderful middle, but the crust, the skin will get a little crustier. So quality of potatoes. We say Idaho potatoes for a reason. Potatoes grow best, taste best at high altitudes. Idaho, as we know, is mountainous, and that's one reason they have the climate, and I guess the soil as well, to grow these russet, is a kind of potato, russet potatoes. You can get russet potatoes from other places, but almost always you can find, in our supermarkets, you can find russets from Idaho, Idaho baking potatoes, and they are superior. They're fluffier. I use them for a lot of things other than baking, but russet potatoes are the fluffy kind of starch potato. So once they're baked and you want to serve them, I clutch one in a pot holder because it's a hot potato, so and I open it up with a fork, cutting across in the potato with a fork, and then I squeeze it. And actually, if you do this with two hands, you can actually fluff it out by pushing in the ends of the potato into the middle, and you'll see it erupts. And now you put on your butter, which, by the way, I did keep at room temperature for a while, so it melted very quickly. And that's sort of it. And salt and pepper. That's all I needed. That was a birthday treat for me. A lot of butter.
Yeah, no. Sorry, busy drooling. Hello.
Good butter, too, I have to say.
Yeah, but I think we should probably say that's... You need a good potato, not one that is...
No, you need a good Idaho russet potato.
And
by the way, potatoes, other kinds of potatoes, I was thinking about this morning, other kinds of potatoes do grow very well, not at high altitudes. And my example of that is Long Island potatoes used to be a thing. At least when I first started, my first job was at Newsday, there were potato fields out east. Now we call it the Hamptons. But that used to be a place where people...
It used to be the potato field.
Cabbage and potatoes.
Yep, absolutely. And I don't know what... Do you think that has to do with the sea air?
Has to do with the environment for sure.
Okay, but
I know the high altitude thing from my experiences in Italy, and then I realized, oh, Idaho, you know, is mountainous too. But for instance, the potatoes from the mountainous areas of Abruzzo are highly regarded. I mean, there are a lot of high altitude potatoes around the world. Let's remember, potatoes were originally from Peru, from the Andes, so they were a high altitude. Because the original potatoes weren't white fleshed like they are now. They were the blue fleshed kind, which we still have. Well, they've been brought back. I don't know, the last 10, 15, 20 years, people started growing those blue fleshed potatoes. But anyway, that's my baked potato. If you want to know about hash browns and so on, we're gonna have to do that on another show. But you gotta have a potato when you have a steak dinner. But interesting, my cousin, who I went out for a steak dinner with recently, said, we got to go to a place that has mushrooms. I don't really want to eat a steak without mushrooms. And I never thought about it, but mushrooms go great with a steak. And I do eat mushrooms with a steak, but I certainly eat a steak without mushrooms. Anyway, the spinach, we got to get to the spinach, which really both Bob and I agreed was the best pot of cream spinach that I've made yet, and I do it every once in a while. What I have learned is that you have to have flour. Otherwise, you're never going to get the richness of a mouthfeel that you get when you go to a restaurant, which they unquestionably put flour. They probably make a bechamel. I don't do that. What I did do last night was, I should say yesterday afternoon, was I sautéed a near quarter cup of finely minced shallot. Since I can't stand for long periods of time, I'm now chopping at the table, and I find that I really get into this finely mincing thing. I had one shallot. It was a nice-sized shallot, but it resulted in at least 3 tablespoons of shallot, 2 tablespoons of butter. Saute the shallot for 3 or 4 minutes. Shallots go quick. And then I added a whole bag, 12 ounces, of chopped leaf spinach, frozen. And it was not defrosted altogether, but ever so slightly. It was out on the counter maybe 20 minutes before I put it in the pan. And then I let it, the spinach, half frozen, cook down. Doesn't take very long. Once it starts defrosting, I mean, you can increase the heat at this point because you've got a lot of moisture in the pan from this frozen spinach. And as soon as it starts defrosting, sort of toss it around with your shallot and butter and cook it until it's reduced to, and cooked, until it's really cooked. It doesn't take much more than 5 minutes. Then I sprinkle on my flour. For the 1 12-ounce bag of spinach, I used a rounded tablespoon of flour, not very much. And I sprinkled that over the surface of the spinach, and still with my pan at medium-high heat, I tossed it around until you couldn't see any flour anymore, and then another minute or two plus. And now I added my liquid, which was milk. I didn't measure. You know, I was just cooking. And I wasn't really thinking about communicating this until I realized when we ate it that this was the best pot I'd done. But so here's what I did. I would say I added about 3/4 of a cup of milk. And by the way, the spinach gives off a little bit of moisture, but not all that much moisture. It gave off less than I thought it would. And I didn't add too much flour. I added 3/4 of a cup of milk. And let that all bubble together for 3 or 4 minutes, seasoned it with salt, pepper, more than a few grindings of nutmeg. I do like nutmeg with spinach. And then let it simmer until it was nice and creamy. And then I added maybe 1/4 cup, not even 1/4, a couple, 3 tablespoons of heavy cream. I actually was emptying out the last bits of cream from a pint container of cream. So it was... it wasn't more than 3 tablespoons of cream. And then let that simmer a little bit. reseason it if you need to. Cook it down as much as you like. We like it a little thin, I would say. I wouldn't say soupy. I eat it with a fork, but Bob, actually, I eat it with a fork, but I also put some of it on my baked potato, which was very good.
All right. And
now we're up to the main feature.
So it really is creamy.
It is creamy. It is creamy with cream,
right.
Milk, butter. It's rich. It's rich and delicious. I'm going to do this one day soon, but I did this 50 years ago. I'm trying to. Some great food writer published this recipe, and I think Joel Robuchon sort of adapted this. But you cook spinach with butter and let it absorb the butter, and you keep adding more butter and more butter. And in the end, you sort of have butter, spinach-flavored butter puree. I don't know if that sounds good to you, but it sounds amazing to me.
It sounds good to me, but...
Yeah, you know, I'm a butter guy. I use very little butter in my kitchen. I'm mainly an olive oil I was going to say pork fat guy, but not really. Olive oil. Anyway... The steak is so important. It's the feature of the meal. So I bought myself, at I thought a good price for today, $23 a pound, boneless prime ribeye steaks. Now, I want to work on this word ribeye. Change, everything changes. When I was a young food writer, a ribeye was just the center round section of a rib steak. These days, they sell the whole rib steak, I would say, as a rib eye. I guess for marketing purposes, the word eye sells the meat, instead of just saying steak. So a rib steak these days, or rib eye these days, consists of that eye, that round piece of very finely grained meat, very tasty, reasonably tender, not as tender as filet mignon, but much tastier. And then there's a crescent section of meat, another muscle, that's attached to the rib eye itself. And I call that dekel, because it's the Yiddish word I grew up with. But it's also called the rib cap. And apparently it's become very trendy among chefs, and for good reason, it's a lot tastier.
It's got fat on it.
The ribeye itself. Pardon me?
I say because it's got some fat.
It's not just fat. It's a different muscle. And the way it works on an animal, including us, is that the muscles that are used all the time are the toughest and also the most flavorful, and the muscles that are used the least are the most tender but lack flavor. This is one of those in-between ones, and it's a coarse grain. It's not, and it is very well marbled. It's fattier than the center section.
So but can one, I just ask about this? Because when I was down at Frank's Steakhouse millions of years ago, all right, I used to be all about shell steaks or New York strip.
Right.
Which I thought was the other half of the... So basically...
It's the other half of the porterhouse or T-bone.
Right. And so we would get... Okay, because what we would end up doing to solve is get a ribeye... Or a porterhouse chicken, and use the eye part of that for the for those who preferred.
Well, in my house, Bob gets the eye, and I get the dekel.
Okay, so
and the way it works out is, I get two steaks, which we can't eat; it's too much. But each steak weighs a little over a pound. They're about at least an inch, but I prefer an inch and a half. These were somewhere in between, I think. I didn't select them myself. I actually asked for a delivery. But they were great steaks anyway. And he eats that part, and I eat the dekel. I prefer the dekel, and he doesn't make... He likes it. By the way, he also likes a tagliata. I don't cut it into eat-sized pieces, but I do make a tagliata, which means, in Italian, sliced steak. And in fact... These two steaks, which are too much, two, by the way, boneless ribeye or rib steaks. I like a on-the-bone steak,
right.
Which, by the way, you should be paying less for than you pay for a boneless, but the market had this at a good price, the boneless ones, and I know the quality of the meat that I'm getting, so I knew it was going to be tasty even if it wasn't on the bone. And actually, my teeth are not in the best shape today, so I wasn't going to be gnawing on a bone anyway. So that's it. How do I cook it? Now, do I wish I had a barbecue outside and I could do it out on charcoal? Yes. I can't do that. I have to do it in my kitchen, which we now know to, especially a prime steak that's well marbled, is going to create a lot of smoke. I put my cast iron skillet over high heat and let it really heat up until it's smoking. And then I put in the steaks, which I have at least an hour ahead of time salted. And actually, I leave them on a rack so they get some air around them, too. I salt them and about an hour ahead. But if you can't, don't worry about it. But do salt them before you cook them. And then I put them in this scorchingly hot pan, 4 minutes the first side. And if they're a full inch and a half, you may want to do 4 minutes on the other side, and they will be well seared. And then 1 minute on the edges. Now, here's a little trick. A cast iron skillet gets very hot at the edges of the skillet and also along the sides of the skillet. So I place my steaks so that the fatty cap on the steak is against the black iron rim of the skillet. And so it's getting seared at the same time, but not quite as well as the side that's flat to the pan. So at the end, after both sides are seared well, I then sear the edges. Now, let me say, yesterday I did it this way. And by the way, the second side usually doesn't take more than 3 minutes. And then you let the steaks rest for 5 minutes before you slice them or eat them. We don't eat the whole steak. I've learned that I'm going to see today if it's as delicious as I think it's going to be. I really like cold steak. So I cook, even though two is too much for us, two deckels is not too much for me. Two ribeyes is too much for Bob. So we have sliced steak the next day, even just to garnish a salad. It's very good. Now, I have been cooking my steak the reverse sear method for a few months now. I've been playing with this, and I do like it. It has its advantages. What it means is that you put it in a low oven. I use 250 and the same size steak, a little over an inch thick, an inch and a half thick, takes 25 minutes at 250 degrees. And then you sear them after they come out of the oven in your hot pan. It should not really take more than 2 minutes per side, and then maybe another minute on the fatty edge. And what happens is, with the reverse sear, the meat does indeed retain its juiciness, but it also takes on a little different texture that you may or may not like better. I don't know. It's sort of a more spongy but compact texture. It's a different texture, cooking it slow and then searing it, as opposed to just searing it over high heat for a longer time. But they're both good methods, and, short of being able to take it outside, which, as I say, I wish I could. I've even considered putting a hibachi on the fire escape, but it is so illegal and dangerous, I've never done it.
Well, you're not going to say, I guess.
So that was it. I have to, if you're a vegetarian, I have to recommend creamed spinach on a baked potato.
If you're a vegetarian,
that may have been the hit of the meal, even though
if you're a vegetarian, you listen. We used to call that the death row meal, and the only thing the one that you did your birthday dinner.
Yeah.
In other words, our last that would be the last thing if we were on death row, that would be our last meal. And
no, mine would not be that.
Well, I'm.
I have to say that is the still. I've been a food communicator, let's call me, for over 50 years.
Maverick.
It is still the number one meal in America. Steak, maybe not cream spinach everywhere in America, in New York it is, a salad. A steak, a salad, and a baked potato. Or a steak, a salad, and hash browns. Or a steak, a salad, and country fries. Steak, potato, salad, vegetable, that's the all-American meal. Even though if you watch American food television, you would think the hamburger. And by the way, in Europe, they all think the hamburger is the number one American meal.
Yeah, but it's not. But, question though, what then is your last meal?
Oh, I always say my last meal is whatever Iris will cook for me.
Oh, okay.
I know it'll be Italian. I know it'll be great, and I know it's filled with love.
All right. So
that's it. It doesn't matter as long as Iris cooks.
That's a beautiful thing.
She knows that, by the way.
All right. Well, I'm just saying the only addition in my version of your second, your penultimate meal, your birthday dinner.
I wanted to go to a steakhouse. That's
I understand.
This all started,
I understand.
You know?
I'm just
but, and I bought these things just in case I didn't want to go out. In the end, I didn't want to go out. So you won. So I won. Well, whatever. I had to cook it, though. It was okay. You know, I haven't had cream spinach in quite a while, or a baked potato. I think I'm going to go eat a few slices of steak.
Yeah, because now you've made us all hungry. So basically, happy birthday.
Thank you.
Can't wait for the next...
I'll just be an official old man.
Yeah, wait till the next for the next.
Well,
minute.
Actually, I have to say I've been an official old man for
the
a long
home.
Time. Right. Now they say I'm elderly.
Oh, you're a pensioner.
Well, that I've been for a while too.
In UK, all right. Well, whatever it is.
Whatever it is, everybody have a great
good time.
Week.
Right, exactly.
We're leading up to Easter.
That's right.
Oh my!
When we speak
Happy
again,
Easter.
It will be Easter Monday. Ooh.
Yep.
So. I guess I should say
day,
Blessed Holy
day.
Week on top of everything.
Easter Monday in Italy is picnic day.
Yeah, Easter Monday, also in Shakespeare, used to be something called Black Monday.
Well, there are
all
foods.
Sorts of...
There are room temperature foods, picnic foods, that Italians love on Easter Monday, including, at least among my friends, a spaghetti pie, or you can call it frittata di spaghetti. I'll do that next week.
Maybe this is what we'll talk about next Monday.
Yeah. We'll talk about Monday dishes.
This is the weird one where Orthodox Easter, which is usually a couple weeks later, is actually the first weekend of May.
Uh-huh.
So that's just interesting because Orthodox Easter falls on the full
moon
after the full moon of Passover.
You know, Greek Easter eggs.
We can do that too.
You can buy dye to make them, that red dye. However, I did it a couple of years ago using onion skin.
Yeah.
And it worked out great.
There are a million ways to do it without...
without dye.
Without FDA. Yeah, exactly.
All right, everyone.
All right.
Happy Easter week. And we'll talk next week.
Happy birthday week. Happy Easter weekend.
Thank you.
Lots of love to you and Bob. Thank you. Arthur Schwartz, the food maven on Robin Hood Radio.